Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Overnight America continues now past midnight in St. Louis, Missouri, Central Time. You know what that means. It is Columbus Day. I wanted to play this for you before about that. To many people, that was their schoolhouse rock, Stan Freberg. In his telling of Columbus Discovers America on his United States of America Volume 1. What an awesome album that is. Yeah, we play that every once in a while on here, and it just so happens to be the start of Columbus Day, so why not? It's funny. Come on now. Back before everything got so political, you could just actually have some fun with it. In the audio, the production they put into something like that, just hilarious, the little gags. All right, this is Overnight America, KMOX. In a few minutes, about 10 minutes from now, we're going to welcome on our guest, author Dean Reuter. He's got a book called The Hidden Nazi. Probably one of the names that were very influential in World War II on the Nazi side that has gone not only long forgotten, but perhaps forced to be forgotten. And there's a reason for that. We'll talk about it with the author of the book, The Hidden Nazi, coming up. Just real quick, I saw this pop up online. David Letterman is doing that interview show on Netflix. I think his season two is going to be starting up, and he teased that he's going to have on the most famous actor in the world. Okay? Now, I want you to guess who the most famous actor of the world is right now. Many of you would think, Tom Hanks, The Rock. Like, think of the largest of the box office giants right now, that anytime they're in something, it goes crazy. All right. Here is David Letterman introducing his next guest. Look like. So he goes out there and he's got this balcony or whatever he goes and walks out of. And there's crowds just waiting to catch a glimpse of him like he's the Pope. I think this is in India. Hindu Times is the website that reported this. And of course, the Netflix trailer goes out ahead of whenever these interviews are going to be released to get a little bit of publicity on it. So it shows them going out to this. It's not necessarily a catwalk. It's not quite a balcony either. So it kind of goes out. When you think of a traditional balcony, you think you open the doors to the house and you walk out, and it's just a small little area that you'd walk out to that's outdoors. Well, this is a little bit more intricate because there's trees and things. It's like they have to walk around the trees, and it's like this big ordeal. So he goes around and he's pretty far away from the doors of the house, and they're waving and going crazy, and everyone's just having a good time out there. And then he goes back into the house and starts cooking performance spells. So there's Letterman pretending to cut himself and give him the big screen. That's what he used to do on a show, right? He always would over exaggerate things like that. And it was kind of funny to see him do that. So it's maybe Letterman was in the good mood when he did this interview. Maybe you get a Letterman two decades ago being able to put this interview together.
For me,
it almost sounds like he's treating him like a cult leader, doesn't it? David Letterman's looking at this guy, Shahrukh Khan, Shahrukh Khan. That's his name. Three words, Shahrukh Khan. And as they put this out, I'm going to have to admit, I haven't watched Letterman's interview show yet on Netflix. I've watched all the other interview shows except for his. I don't know why I'm waiting so long to do it. He's got some interesting guests. I really wanted to check out the one he had with Kanye, and he did some other ones too. And he's good at keeping a conversation. But man, I am still a fan of just the classic interview, so I will have to check this one out. But how can you call the most popular actor in the world? I'm sorry. People don't know. Okay, no one knows who he is. You're probably going to introduce him to a lot of people. If you're the most popular, certainly people would already know who you are. Now, maybe in that region, maybe on that side of the world, he's the most popular. I get that. All right, The Hidden Nazi is the name of the book. author Dean Reuter. We're going to join him next. If you want a little bit of history, you're going to learn some really fascinating things with him on KMOX. Joining us now is author Dean Reuter, of General Counsel, Vice President, and Director of the Practice Groups of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy. Thank you for coming on to KMOX.
So happy to be here, Ryan.
So your new book is called The Hidden Nazi, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil. And you decided to look at this and investigate someone that may be considered a ghost, because there's not a lot written about this one in particular person you focused on the book, and his name was General Hans Kammler. What did you learn about him, and what really tipped you off to try to, I guess, really investigate him to begin with?
Sure. Again, thanks for having me on. The Hidden Nazi, the book, is basically a story about this man, although it has several other storylines developed within the book. But Kammler is a particularly nasty guy, even for an SS Nazi general, and a particularly powerful man. He helped make the Holocaust possible, which is really an extraordinary thing to say if you think about it. He really was the personification of evil, but he was also ruthlessly powerful. By the end of the war, he not only had worked on the Holocaust, he ruled all of Germany's secret weapons, including the infamous German vengeance weapons, the German V-1 and V-2 rockets, the revolutionary jet aircraft, all their special munitions, shape charges, even nuclear research. But nobody has written about Hans Kammler because, reputedly, at the end of the war, May 1945, according to his driver, he committed suicide. So nobody's chased him or his record. In the fall of 1948, a German court, even at the request of his wife, had him adjudicated dead, declared him dead, and history has just forgotten him. And I got involved in the project through a couple of researchers whose names are on the cover of The Hidden Nazi. When they approached me, really, to do a collaboration agreement, they had found each other in a World War II forum online. Mm-hmm. I knew one of them. I was a lawyer. He knew me to be a lawyer, so he asked me to draft a collaboration agreement so those two researchers could share information. And, you know, they started feeding me information bit by bit by bit and got me intrigued in this story. It just seemed impossible to me because it sounded like fiction, but it's nonfiction.
When you started to look into all of this, was his primary role in the war for Germany just to create weapons?
No, I mean, he was trained as an architect and engineer, so he had an undergraduate degree and he had a PhD in engineering. That was his training, and his first projects during the war were actually pretty benign. They were, you know, a telecommunications network, a police test track, a lot of buildings, some infrastructure, basically civil service projects. But when the Holocaust began to ramp up, he's the guy who actually designed the concentration camps. He's the guy that helped pick Auschwitz as an expanded concentration camp. So he was expanding the concentration camps that already existed, making them bigger, building new ones, really laying out the structure of these camps, designing the standard concentration camp barracks even, and then involved in installing the gas chambers and the ovens. And I don't mean just from some bureaucratic distance. He was doing this on a day-to-day basis, moving as a dust cloud was his nickname. Staubwolke was his nickname during the war because he was so active, moving from one site to another, demanding changes, barking orders, demanding his orders be followed, even shooting his pistol in the air to get greater activity from his subordinates and from the slaves that he ruled over. So that was the final horrible thing he did, was rule over Germany's slave labor trade. Then he turned. It was only then, near the end of the war, that he turned to the weapons.
Wow, and it's amazing. You wouldn't normally think someone that's designing or an architect would be someone that they would also trust with something weaponry, missiles, things like that. How did he really gain the trust, and why did Hitler love him so much?
That's a great question. You know, in Nazi Germany, there's this division between the party people and the non-party people. There were the straight military people who Hitler really didn't trust, the people that preceded him, the entities that preceded him, his ascendants, Hitler didn't really trust. So Kammler was an ideologue. He was a Nazi party member, but critically, he joined the party even as Hitler was just rising to power, so he was in on the ground floor, he joined the SS, the dreaded SS, the Schutzstaffel, just as Hitler was coming to power. And then he came up through the Luftwaffe, which was the German Air Force. Mm-hmm. That was an entity that Hitler basically started. It didn't exist before Hitler. So Kammler came with this just unbelievable record that gave him credibility because he was an early adherent to all things Hitler.
Wow. Author Dean Reuter joining us now in the new book's called The Hidden Nazi, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil. So when we look back at World War II, there has been a lot documented. And were you surprised to find that someone with this much prominence inside the Nazi party, the person that was orchestrating, putting together, and really had his hand in a lot of the weaponry, were you surprised that this person's name was long forgotten?
Ryan, I was stunned. As I said, the researchers brought me this project and they started feeding me this information. I didn't believe it. I thought they either didn't know what they had or they were looking at the documents incorrectly. It doesn't make sense that somebody so powerful and so wicked could have escaped attention. But it's because he committed suicide and nobody tracked him down. Now, in doing our research, we've discovered that he didn't actually commit suicide. Mm. There's much more to the story. So it becomes not just a biography, but a real sort of mystery and thriller. That's what The Hidden Nazi is in the book.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of people say that about Hitler. There's that conspiracy, like he really escaped. And, you know, there's people that post photos or they like to try to understand what would have happened if, you know, maybe Hitler didn't die at the end of World War II. What if he went on to live a life hidden somewhere else in another country? So I was going to ask you the same thing. The whole suicide, the motive of that seems to be something that has spurred a lot of people, at least in modern days, to look back and see if that really happened. Before, I don't know what the mindset was in the 1940s, if people were just very trusting or if they just took it as, you know, they had to have done something like that. But it seems like now, in hindsight, a lot of people are looking back and trying to do investigations into what happened during World War II. There's probably a lot of documents for you to go back and look at, too. And I'm guessing some of them from the U.S. government have been unclassified or at least have been released in recent years that have been helpful.
Yes. Yeah, there was a big push to unclassify or declassify lots of American records. Some of them still remain classified. There are documents that the government agrees concern Kammler that were produced in 1969 and 1987. So, you know, almost 40 years, more than 40 years after his reported death. These are documents that concern him that the government still won't produce to us.
Wow.
Through Freedom of Information Act requests. Yeah.
Wow, that's remarkable.
But we did find, I mean, the documents are in an unbelievable state of disorder. You know, the World War II was the largest undertaking in the history of mankind. And it's almost like at the end of the war, everybody just put everything in boxes and moved on. And there have been lots of attempts to organize things and categorize things. And a lot of documents now are digitized and you can find them online. But you never really get a great sense of what's missing, what's in the box that you're not seeing. It's very difficult to do research into the era and feel comfortable that you're looking at everything.
I've heard people mention that at the time, of course, they weren't worried about the record keeping. They were worried about winning. So that's why a lot of this stuff, it takes a long time and a lot of research. And it's amazing how many government documents have just gone unnoticed after the years because, you know, if you think about it, you know, they're now just declassifying some of the Kennedy assassination documents over the most recent years. And you can go back and eventually they'll put these things out in sort of chunks. And it's remarkable because you even go back like, you know, Lyndon B. Johnson and Nixon tapes. We still haven't even listened to all of those. And it's been decades and decades and decades after the fact. It takes someone with a passion for it to go back and look into it. The Hidden Nazi is the name of the book. Author Dean Reuter joining us here, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil. So what's America's deal? What portion of the story does that come in?
Well, we've talked briefly about the weapons. At the end of the war, Hans Kammler was in charge of all of Germany's secret weapons. As it was known, Germany was going to lose the war, their territories contracting. Everybody realizes there's going to be this mad scramble for all the technology. The Germans were way ahead in terms of rockets. And whichever country got the rocket team would thrive, would win the Cold War, probably. Everybody knew the Russians were going to be the enemy of the United States. It's our the thesis of the book that Hans Kammler, and we have him writing orders, two orders to move the rocket team to get them out of the way of the Soviet Union, basically hand deliver them to the United States Army. We know the rocket team came to the United States. That's pretty well known. A couple hundred rocket scientists, including Wernher von Braun, got here. Mm-hmm. But what's not known is that it was Hans Kammler that really hand delivered them in an attempt to save his own skin.
Wow.
Where the story, the idea of a deal sort of falls apart is, well, why did he commit suicide then? But when we know, when we're the only ones who know, that he didn't in fact commit suicide, the idea of the Kammler deal, as we call it, makes a lot more sense.
The book is called The Hidden Nazi, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil, and author Dean Reuter, he is someone that put a lot of work into this, and it's a really fascinating thought that there's a person so involved in the Nazi Party with so many atrocities under this person's control that went unnoticed, in fact, forgotten over the decades. That, in fact, there's a lot to learn about what happened with General Hans Kammler. We'll continue our conversation with the author next on KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Renker. Have you ever heard of General Hans Kammler, a monster of World War II? The book about him out now by author Dean Reuter is called The Hidden Nazi. When I was looking at some of the different things that you discovered in your book, The Hidden Nazi, I realized that and you mentioned this just in your last answer, that Germany and the Nazis were very close to getting the bombs. So nuclear weapons were much further along with the Nazis than we could have ever anticipated. And what would have happened then if, let's say, that technology, they were able to develop it faster than us, and what would have happened in the course of World War II if that was the case? Because you look back and you realize that if their missiles were as strong and devastating as we go back and look at it now, that would have been a real game changer in the entire war.
Game changer is the right word. And the missiles we talk about in the book are mostly the V-1 and V-2, well known. There's a lesser known rocket called the Americo rocket that the Germans had in a stage of development that was designed to reach the eastern seaboard of the United States. So New York, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Boston, all within range of a Nazi missile. And when you combine that with the progress they were making on nuclear weapons, game changer might not be a big enough word.
It's hard to theorize what would have happened in World War II, but you talk about how this may have been something that would have backed the United States off. They would have been scared to approach at that point if they would have known just the amount of firepower that the Germans had. And that would have been an unbelievable. I can't imagine what would have happened and how that would have shaped the world if the United States didn't become involved like they did when they did in World War II. I mean, that game changer might be an underscore based on what we know now. You know, what's interesting, too, about some of the back, when we look back, it's how some of the Nazis, in fact, even were used here in the United States after the war, like in NASA, for example, in our space program. So when we look at some of the weaponry in the United States, is there a chance that we may have taken some of that technology and used it for ourselves?
Oh, it's a certainty.
Yeah.
That this is the rocket team that Kammler delivered to us. Wernher von Braun and others came to the United States. It basically became NASA, and it was them that got us on the moon and helped develop our ICBM. In fact, there's an old Bob Hope joke, and there's a lot of truth and humor a lot of times, but Bob Hope's joke was, we got to the moon, the Americans, we got to the moon first because our Nazi rocket scientists were better than the Russian Nazi scientists.
Oh, wow. When I look to and the way history is rewriting itself, it seems like when we start to learn about some of these things, and your book called The Hidden Nazi, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil, author Dean Reuter. By the way, if people want to check out this book and the work you've done, where can they find it?
It's at bookstores everywhere and on Amazon tomorrow. It debuts tomorrow.
So exciting.
You can order it tonight on Amazon and probably still get it tomorrow.
Isn't that amazing how Amazon works? You can order something and get it the next day.
Yes, it is.
Do that all the time. It seems like they're on top of their game. Next day delivery is their goal. And it's amazing
Absolutely.
How fast you can get physical copies in your hand. Amazon's
and you can, of course, get it at bookstores. So.
Oh, perfect. We have great local bookstores here in St. Louis, too. Okay, so hidden afterwards, and one other thing I wanted to ask you about General Hans Kammler is that the Fourth Reich, was he someone that was trying to organize another rise with the Nazis?
Yeah, this is something, gets into that area of fiction that you talk about, where people, some conspiracy theorists are pushing this idea. But we, in doing our research, found concrete evidence of a meeting of German high officials, Nazi high officials, government officials from the German government, and German industrialists in the fall of 1944. So, you know, 8 months before the war ends, these folks are meeting, and the whole purpose of that meeting was to instruct German industrials to take all their technology, all their raw gold, ship it out of the country, get it off the Reich, and preserve it for later. And, you know, it's pretty common knowledge that a lot of Germans, not all Nazis, of course, but there's a huge German population in South America and Argentina and some other countries. We also found a 1953 CIA report that expressed alarm at German enclaves in South America that were extremely well-funded, that were full of technology, full of scientists, and looked like, you know, the groundwork for the Fourth Reich. And, you know, we also see concrete evidence of individual Nazis making their own exit strategies in the months before the war ended. Everybody knew Germany was going to move, going to lose, rather. So it's only natural to think that they were going to make some sorts of preparations to survive and maybe even thrive. And if you take the long arc of history, if you look back to World War One, most of these senior Nazi officials remember World War One. Germany suffered a staggering and sudden loss, and yet they rose again.
Wow.
So why wouldn't they rise again after World War II?
Isn't that something? Man, wouldn't that have been crazy? That seems like there's so much that could be branched off of that if you wanted to figure out the trajectory of the world based on some of these events. And it's hard to believe it could come down to just a few people that can change all of the world events.
It really is. It's stunning when you, and there are a lot of story threads in this book, The Hidden Nazi, but that's one of them. And it really is something to contemplate.
Author Dean Reuter, one last question for you. I know that when you're trying to go through a bunch of documents that seem unsorted, not a lot of organization. In fact, you may be the first person to look at some of these documents in the last half century. Do you find that when you're doing research for a book, it's nearly impossible to get off of the research stage? You just get so obsessed and you think, man, if I just keep looking one more day, I might find one other big thing. Because when you're uncovering things that haven't been uncovered in so long, it's almost like an obsession when you start looking these things up.
Obsession is a great word for that, Ryan. I mean, you have to be, you know, interested in the chase, interested in the hunt, a puzzle solver, somebody who gets the thrill of holding a document, as you say, in their hands for the first time in 70 years. And one thing, in addition, everything you said was correct, but one additional thing I found was that, you know, you start doing this research, and years later, you can go back and look at documents that you looked at the outset and have a whole new appreciation for them because of what you've learned in the interim. So you have to kind of double check everything. But one important thing I learned from a historian, a chaired historian at Harvard, he said, be careful because you'll know exactly what you know, but you don't know what's in the next box.
Yeah.
And you're right. You want to keep going. But at some point, you have to draw a line and say, okay, we've got our book. We've got enough material here. We've got to stop. And yet this book writing process, I mean, this book was available for pre-order on Amazon before it was finished writing because we kept, we got to put this in.
Yeah,
here's a new storyline. We got to put this in.
You couldn't help yourself. Are you married?
I am.
Yeah. Did you end up giving daily reports every time you find something interesting to your wife?
And my father. My father was one of my most constant readers and encouragers. And my wife gave up vacations. I mean, we'd go on vacation together, you know, been to Europe a few times and up and down the all over the country interviewing people.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if you ever watched that show House when it was on TV for Fox.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you would laugh at it because it seems like the plot lines are exactly the same where you're like, okay, this happens and they fail, this happens, they fail. But then there's that little stroke of inspiration and that solves the entire case. You know what? It's amazing how sometimes you stumble upon the littlest things that break through some of the biggest revelations and how they can really help the research. And, you know, I laugh at little things like that until you start to research things on your own and you realize that's kind of how it happens.
It really can. It really can. And I was blessed to have two researchers. And it's, I mean, all of that then is based on hard work at the outset. You've got to keep going and going and going, and then you find the golden nugget.
Yeah. Okay. Amazon, you can find it on their local bookstores. The Hidden Nazi, The Untold Story of America's Deal with the Devil, author Dean Reuter. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about your book on KMOX.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Ryan.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line at a really fascinating look at that. And his book's really fascinating. It's amazing, too, if you think of all the undiscovered historical gems that are yet to be reported on just right here. Even in this country, don't even have to look back too far. Well, coming up in the next hour, there was a guest we had on this week too, Dr. Jacob Appel, and he had a couple of different moral dilemmas, and these are all very fascinating moral dilemmas. What would you do scenarios? Like, let me give you a quick one. Father goes in to get a kidney transplant. The son gets tested to see if he's eligible to transplant, and during that test, they find out he's not really the son. Do you tell the boy? Do you tell the father? Moral dilemmas coming up. Overnight America.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.